This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. If you're of a certain age, you may well remember your parents urging you to eat all the food on your plate with the following admonishment. Don't you know there are starving children in Africa or somewhere in the world? Well, in our household, my parents made a point of reminding their three kids that there were starving children in America, and they would occasionally pick up a book to prove the point. That book is called Still Hungry in America. In the spirit of Walker Evans' Depression-era photographs, it chronicled Southern poverty in the 60s, a time when the mass mechanization of farming had pushed thousands of sharecroppers out of work. The book challenged the notion that the U.S. was a land of plenty with its grim portrait of malnourished children and families crowded in tar paper shacks. The man who took those photographs, his name is Al Clayton.
It was so graphic with small folks. The face of a hungry child or their demeanor just really prints on me. It's unforgettable.
Unforgettable, indeed. I have my copy right here, and the pictures are so powerful. If you're interested, you can actually see some of these shots at our website. For years now, the book has been sitting on a shelf in my office. Over time, when I glanced up and saw that title, Still Hungry in America, it seemed more like a question than a statement of historical fact. Are people still hungry in America? What happened in the places where those photographs were taken? To find out, we had to go back to where this story begins, back to 1967.
Mr. Chairman, that this is a reflection on all of us in the most prosperous country in the world.
That spring, there was a fierce debate in the Senate over funding for anti-poverty programs. To help break that logjam, a Senate subcommittee held a hearing in Jackson, Mississippi. There, lawmakers were confronted by a feisty young civil rights advocate named Marion Wright.
Somebody must begin to respond to them. I wish the senators would have a chance to go and just look at the empty cupboards in the Delta and the number of people who are going around begging just to feed their children. And starvation is a major, major problem now.
The next day, two senators, Robert Kennedy of New York and Joe Clark of Pennsylvania, toured the Delta.
Senator Kennedy.
They visited with poor families, peered in their kitchens, and talked with children who barely ate one meal a day.
What we have here, of course, is a considerable amount of hunger. We have the children with distended stomachs. And the fact is that we're not doing what we should be doing in this country to deal with this problem.
The senators returned to Washington committed to combat hunger. But to make their case, they needed proof that people were quite literally starving. And this is how the photographs in the book Still Hungry in America came in. Soon after that trip to the Delta, the photographer, Al Clayton, got a call. A friend from the civil rights group, the Southern Regional Council, had a proposition.
A team of docs were traveling through the South doing more or less physical exams and interviews on poor folks. And what they found was that so many people were suffering from dreadful diseases associated with malnutrition. He called me to go in the same place the docs had gone, and it was, dear Lord, it was revealing.
So while those physicians were pressing stethoscopes against the rib cages of wiry children, the photographer traveled the same dusty roads in an old Pontiac sedan. Clayton recalls that his guide was Kenneth Dean, a young, white civil rights activist and a fellow Southerner.
We would start the day off in Ken's car, and he would drive in some direction and stop at a house or a community and get out, and he would start talking. I would take pictures, recording their lives, their homes, their beds, their porches, what they ate, and I think at night or on the weekend was when my wrapping came off, so to speak. I would get very depressed and sit on the edge of the bed and cry.
Clayton said his challenge was to portray despair without violating the family's dignity. The trip haunted him.
I think it was just documenting their environment, like to come into a house with six folks and find a cup of rice and a cup of dried beans and a little cornmeal as being, that's all they have to eat. years went by past this, I would get in my car and drive back to the Delta and see a house that was interesting, had people in the yard, knock on doors, talk with them, take their pictures.
Was it a way to sort of work through some of those feelings and some of those emotions?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be it. And the curiosity I had about how are things over there now, and see for myself, how did they fare? What is their life like now? And to go back and go back and go back.
We too wanted to go back, to travel those same roads in Mississippi and see how or if things had changed. To find out, we went to one of the small Delta towns featured in the book. Belzona, Mississippi is the seat of Humphreys County, still one of the poorest counties in one of the poorest states in the U.S. The median household income is around $20,000, and about a third of the residents receive food stamps. Back in the 60s, cotton was king. Now, the town markets itself as the nation's catfish capital. Along Main Street, playful catfish statues stand on almost every street corner. We wanted to find places where some of the original pictures were shot, so we called the photographer's original guide.
How are you today, sir? All right, I'm Kenneth Dean.
Kenneth Dean is now 71. He's a bear of a man who has a gift for putting strangers at ease. Just a few blocks past Main Street, Kenneth Dean led us back to one of the neighborhoods he visited with Al Clayton. We stop along Fisk Street at a row of shotgun shacks, each about the size of a single-car garage. They're all white, all in a similar state of disrepair, sagging under rotting wood and peeling paint.
In 2006, did you expect that you would still see these houses?
Oh, no.
Looking just like this?
No, I did not think this would be here. Most places in the Delta, this is gone. These are people who live on the margins of life.
Take me back to the day when you came here and first saw these houses. Do you remember that day?
Yes, I do remember that day, and all I can say to you is that I walked around with my chin down. I would ask people, could I go in their kitchens, that we wanted to see if we could help them develop better food programs, and then I would ask them where they kept their food. Could I see them in their refrigerator? There was almost no food in it. The one symbol that I remember more than anything else would be a mother holding her baby in her arms, holding that refrigerator door open, and seeing there the mother and the child who were malnourished, and then seeing the symbol of why they were malnourished.
Fisk Street is eerily quiet in the morning, but by afternoon it comes alive when children return from school and locals cluster on the front porches.
Hello.
She's
small.
Mama.
How are you doing?
Fine.
Good, good, good. You're just sitting out here.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I sit down on your porch next to you? Would that be okay?
Cassandra Hughes has an inviting smile. She's raised three children in a Fisk Street shack, two doors down from the one she grew up in. Hughes is 24 and unemployed. She lives on a combination of welfare and child support payments. She gives us a quick tour of her home where the TV's on, even though no one's inside.
Okay.
Hey, Cassandra, this is your house?
I try to keep it nice. This is different. This is where we sleep, sit.
She tries to keep it nice, but she doesn't have much to work with. The floor is rotting. The windows are broken. There's no light fixture, just a naked bulb. The kitchen is so small, Hughes can't stand in front of the stove when she cooks.
We have running water. Back up dishes I need to wash for real quick.
So your refrigerator, does your freezer work?
I gotta get someone to come and look at it.
Her refrigerator is broken. She pays $75 in rent, even though her hot water has been off for months. She can't get the landlord to make the repair. But her cupboard is full of basics. Crisco, macaroni, beans, rice, and powdered milk.
What's for dinner tonight?
I don't know. I don't know what the kids want to eat. It's whatever they want to eat. That's what I eat.
And when they do, since there's no table, they'll sit on the floor or on the couch. But the point is, there is something to eat.
Back out on Fisk Street, children bounce on a trampoline. It's clear that much has changed since the 1960s. People on Fisk Street simply look better. The children aren't rail thin, no one's wearing tattered clothes, and everyone is wearing shoes, usually gleaming white athletic shoes. In the photos from the book, almost everyone was barefoot. None of the residents we met on Fisk Street had ever heard of Still Hungry in America, but everyone was fascinated. They passed the book around, pointing out things that looked familiar. One of those people was Edna Chapman.
Look at it. They talking about this book show you.
What?
This book show you how it was.
Edna Chapman is 48 years old. She grew up on this street. She doesn't recognize anyone in the book, but she's familiar with the hardship that the pictures portray. Things now, she says, are much better.
We got a card, and we get stamped, food stamped. We can go make groceries and feed the children. And that's a blessing. And one for that, we probably will be starving. Ain't that right, baby? Me and my little boy get $160-something.
Now, how far does $160-something?
Well, it don't. It lasts, but I have to buy a little. Like I run out of bread and stuff, I have to spend cash money.
Now, you're right here near the end of the month. How much, do you have anything left on your card?
Ain't nothing on him. Ain't nothing on him yet. It help us, but it ain't enough. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And what kind of changes have you seen in the 4 decades?
I've seen a lot of changes because back in the day when my mother was coming up, we were starving. And Daddy left her with seven kids. We couldn't go to school. We had to go and work and field, pick kite and pull a stump up out the ground. We little old bit of something. But if we hadn't did that, all of us probably would have been dead.
When I came up, I have this book, and I showed it to you. You told me you couldn't read. You didn't learn how to read.
I can't. Mm-mm. That's the problem.
Now I got to go somewhere.
That's my daughter.
Mom, don't play with me.
She's going to graduate from college, Jackson State. And that's a blessing.
She's graduating from college.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be there.
And I will be there.
With a big smile on your face.
Yes, yes.
You got a big smile right now.
But I'm happy for her because she done did it. She done did it up.
Edna Chapman's daughter, the one who's graduating from college, is an exception. Many here are mired in a life of poverty. But hunger is not the central issue. In a moment, we'll return to Belzona to hear about a new health challenge. Coming up, from starvation to obesity. That's when we return to All Things Considered from NPR News.